Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Valerie Parker. I'm a businesswoman, author, and speaker. I'm the author of three books, the first, From the Soul of a Woman, Love Shouldn't Hurt, and then Unveiling Secrets from the Heart, Forgiving Your Past to Free Your Future, and Restored Vessels, Young Adults Overcoming Adversities is my third book, and my fourth book, Unlimited Possibilities, A Roadmap to Recovery. And I am so thrilled tonight to have with me my co-host, Shirley Carter. Shirley, are you there?
Yes, good evening, everyone. I am an entrepreneur and a motivational speaker as well. Thank you for joining us.
Shirley lives in the Detroit area, and we just came from Detroit doing a Fight for Your Dream tour, and I had the pleasure of being at the event with five of our speakers, Iris Tucker, Cheryl Lynn, T. Wayne Gatewood, Patricia Phillips, and Alan McDougall. And tonight I have Alan McDougall on the show with us tonight. And he's the author of a book called Breaking Through. Alan, are you there?
Absolutely. How are you, Val?
I am excited about the possibilities.
So am I.
Yes. It was a pleasure seeing you over this past weekend, and you also, Shirley. And, you know, I love doing what I do. I love seeing people's lives transformed. I love the excitement and looking at their faces and seeing the shift that occurs. And, Alan, your book, Breaking Through, is so timely for this tour, Fight for Your Dreams, because that's what it's about. It's about breaking through to the other side. Alan is a motivational speaker, and by trade, he does counseling to, Alan, those that are in mourning. You do transitional. Could you explain that, what it is you do, Alan?
Sure, I can, Val. And what I do is I'm a crisis counselor, and I travel all through North America. And whenever I work for the United Steelworkers Union, and whenever we have a fatality in our union or a critical injury, which to me is a life-altering event, then I go out and I travel to the accident scene. I don't do any accident investigation, but I focus the time on the family and the members and the employees of the companies that have seen these traumatic accidents happen right before their eyes.
Wow.
And I go in and I help them with their emotions, and I help them if they have any legal or compensation problems on behalf of the union. And then, Val, what we do is I have 30 people trained across North America, and we do follow up with those families and members for up to a year.
Wow, that is awesome. You know, Alan, doing what you do, it must be a tremendous emotional strain on you as well. You know, being that you're a motivation and inspirational speaker, I know it's me myself. Sometimes I get caught up emotionally into different cases. You know, my foundation caters to domestic abuse, and I can't help but sometimes divert back into when I myself was a victim. And then I, by the help of God, I'm able to pull and make that shift, but it's a struggle at times. Do you find that to be the case for you?
Yes, I do from time to time. That's why when I took over this department 5 years ago, there were only three people doing this, and we were only going to the initial scene or the initial accident or the initial critical injury, and we didn't do any follow-up. And if I just may back up for maybe 15 seconds, Val, as you know, when there's a fatality or critical injury or a death in the family, everyone is there at the beginning, and we all say with good intentions that we're going to carry through and help the family and take care of them. But sometimes life takes over, and in 3 to 6 or 9 months or 18 weeks down the road, we get caught up. So I asked and trained for 30 people to take the burden off of myself as the director of the program so I don't have to travel as much. And the other thing I do for my self-protection is whenever we have a lot of our members burned in refineries and steel mills, and I do not go into the actual burn victims' rooms anymore because I've seen too much of it, and I'm also taking away time that the family is limited to see their loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I protect myself that way, but, you know, I've learned so much from this program. I am there to give counsel and comfort to the families, and they, in turn, give it back to me. It's such a humbling experience.
Wow, that's powerful. Alan, tell me about breaking through.
Well, breaking through was a 24-year-old dream of mine, and it also helped me with my regular job of the crisis counseling, because you had just mentioned about you're always seeing someone in sad times, so we need something to balance that.
Mm-hmm.
So writing the book, and I never actually did write a word in the book. I recorded everything on tape recorder. I'm not that computer literate, and I knew if I took the time to learn how to use Word and word processing, I would never get the book done. So I knew what I could do best.
So you took my advice?
I did a tape recording.
Right. That's what I tell everybody that wants to write a book and, you know, are not computer savvy and writing it by hand. The best way to do it is speak it into recording, because I feel that when you do that, you're transferring your heart. You tend more to speak your heart than write your heart. But I write both my heart.
You are absolutely both correct, because the feedback that I've been getting from the book in the last, since I had it published last August, I received a letter last night from a man I met once. He purchased the book last Friday in Pittsburgh, and the letter he wrote last night, the last paragraph, I actually broke down and I couldn't read it because it affected me so much. And the purpose of my book was for impact, not so much income. But just backing up a little bit, the reason for the book was to go through my horrendous upbringing and childhood and talk about the breakthrough from living in the problem to living in the solution, and then to write about my life 24 years after that happened to help other people. And that has been a wonderful counterbalance, if you would, for my stressful job with the union.
Okay. Who is Alan McDougall?
I'm sorry?
Who is Alan McDougall?
Oh, you're going to have to buy the book, Val, to find that out.
Give me some information of who are you, how did you derive from that, because one of the things you didn't say is that you were a recovering alcoholic, so... Talk a little bit about that transition and how. And the reason why I'm asking you to do it, to give some experts, not saying, you know, tell your story with the book, but, you know, we're ex-something. We're ex-drug addicts, ex-prostitutes, ex-liars, ex-fornicators, ex-adulterers. We're ex-something. And a lot of times we won't forgive ourselves, so that we can transition into the greatness that God has already given us. And that's where the problem lies. What was the aha moment for you that caused you to transition to be who you are now?
Right, and that's a great question, Val. And as you know, I never used to have a sense of humor when I was living in my alcoholism. Excuse me, but you can tell by my last answer... Excuse me, that I have a great sense of humor, and that's something that I never knew I had. Excuse me. But the problem I had was alcohol. But you know something, Val, and I don't know who all is listening on here, but alcohol was never my problem. Alcohol was a symptom or a solution to my problems. There's an old saying I heard a long time ago. If you get a drunken horse thief sober, you still have a horse thief. So the issues were within me. I spent 22 years working underground in a nickel mine, a copper mine up in Canada. And I always tell this story. The richness that I took from Mother Earth in copper and gold and platinum and zinc and took out of there for 20-some years of my life, when I quit the drinking back in June of 1987, the journey that I've taken in the last 24 years, the 18 inches of my mine shaft from my head to my heart, I've discovered more richness within me that are much more valuable to me and my world. So the aha moment when all that happened was sitting in a bar on June the 2nd, 1987, with my favorite love affair, which was alcohol, and drinking rye and Pepsi, whiskey and Pepsi, and I would take a drink, and I would try to swallow it, and I would go to the bathroom, and I would throw it up, and I would go wash my face, go back to the table, order another, go back to the bathroom, and throw up. And I did that, Val, for 5 hours.
Wow.
5 hours of hell. And I had a choice that day to make. One, go out and buy a gun and commit suicide the quick and easy way, if you would. Or two, continue drinking and end up probably in an institution with wet brain or central nervous system damage. And or try sobriety. And I tried sobriety.
I'm so glad you did, because then I wouldn't have never met a wonderful individual called Alan McDougall.
Well, I thank you. And you know something, Val? I wouldn't have met the individual Alan McDougall either, because I didn't know who I was when I quit drinking. So the journey has been wonderful. And in my book, I've been asked a question. Has the book Breaking Through taken a toll on me? And I said, absolutely, it's taken a toll on me. Not the recording, not the editing, not the financial burden put upon me to have it published, but the living a life of value from 1987 till present, to have a book to write about on a life of value.
You know, in my book, I share a lot in A Soul of a Woman. It's a small book, but it's a quick, easy read because I've been through so much. I mean, it would literally be a novel if I wrote down everything about who Valerie Parker is and how I was able to get from A to B and then to C. Do you find that even though you've written the book, that there's still so much more, and that, you know, you still had pages or you still have books in you that you still need to write from your life experience?
Yes. I had no concept how long or how big or how thick or how many pages a book would be. And when I sat down to write this book that I had a dream of, I thought, how am I going to do this? And Les Brown and other speakers have taught me that don't let your obstacles stay obstacles. Let them become opportunities. So I said, I know what I do well. I speak well. I talk a lot. So that's when I went and I made a commitment to me 2 years ago to record 3 mini tapes a week and carry them to the post office every Friday afternoon and mail them to a woman that lives in the other end of Pennsylvania, and she would put them into a Word and then email them back to me. Now, I couldn't probably handle the idea of writing a whole book. But by doing the one step at a time, which were 3 tapes a week, I made that commitment. And what it was it ended up into a 400-page book.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I've gone deeper into that mine shaft of mine, I'm starting to write another book already.
Wow. That's awesome. And is it Is the messages or the pages in your book a form of ministry for you as it is for me, or no?
Absolutely. It talks about my life as a young boy, right from birth right up to my age right now, and I just talk about my experiences, I talk about my strengths, and I talk about my hopes for the future. And I'm telling you, when I was recording it, I didn't feel a deep, deep emotion. I felt emotional sometimes, of course, as I was reliving those memories.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
it's funny,
Val, it's funny when I go to speak at a speaking engagement and I open up the book to read a page or two, that's when I feel the deeper emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, as I said, when you're speaking it, you talk from a place of knowing and being in that place, so it's very passionate, and the transparency is what destroys the yokes and breaks the bondage of those that are listening to you, so that they can know that, well, if Alan did it, then I can do it. So it brings forth a clear reality of what's possible.
And that's excuse me, and that's all we have today, Val. That's all we have is a knowing that it's possible. That's all we can hang on to sometimes, knowing. And when I was living my life, I didn't even have that at one time. But I surrounded myself with people that knew I had more potential in me and loved me more than I did myself.
Mm-hmm. And that indeed is the key.
It is. I always say this, Val, I'm a success, whatever that is, I'm a success in spite of myself, because my thinking got me sleeping in ditches. I'll tell you a funny story. I dedicated a whole chapter to my sponsor in AA, but I just want to get this clear. My book is not about alcoholism. My book is about, it's not about overcoming an addiction. It's about what I've done with my life since that time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But Jim, I was starting to go to meetings and I was nervous and I wanted to say something because everybody else was talking. So I said to Jim, my sponsor, he was a rough, tough old guy but loved me dearly. I said, Jim, when can I start speaking at meetings? And he said very gruffly, what would you have to say to anyone to help them? He said, your best thinking got you sleeping in ditches and living in flop houses. He said, you need to close your mouth and open up your ears and open up your heart and start listening to people that have something to say.
Mm. Now, you know, that is something that you say that, because one of the things that I tell individuals that are pursuing their passion and pursuing their dream is that you have a dream in front of you, but watch someone who is doing, so that you can aspire to do what they're doing and do it even better. So Jim actually said to you, sit down, shut up, and listen and focus. Look how I'm doing it. Then you'll be able to be ready. But right now, you got a lot of work to do. And that's one of the things that we don't want to accept. We think that we know it all because we got this plan and we're fired up and we're ready to go. And then all of a sudden we run out of steam because that we didn't have any plans, we didn't have any preparations and things in order to get to the next level. And that's why a lot of people fail at pursuing their passion, because it doesn't turn out the way they see it. Because we're all, you know, especially men are visionaries. They see things already done. Whereas with a woman will take it, will analyze it, We'll carry it around in our womb of faith, which is our thought process, and we'll analyze it and make sure it's what it's supposed to be. And then when it comes forth, we're able to give birth. We're the only species that walk around that have two wombs. We have a natural womb and a spiritual womb. So we give birth in the spirit, and we give birth naturally. So it's a natural process for us to hold things in our incubator until it's time to come forth.
Well, that's well said. I was kept in the incubator of people, like I said a few minutes ago. I met my best friends that I drank with, one of them, my best buddy, never spoke to me since the day I quit drinking. And I learned
even
who my true
day?
Friends were. I'm sorry?
Even to this day?
Even to this day, Val.
Wow.
That hurt me a lot. That hurt me a lot in the beginning. And I talk about that in my book. But, you know, as you talk about the incubator and the womb, I was kept in the womb of love from people that had been where I was and
mm-hmm.
were living a new life. And I begged and I borrowed and I stole everything I have today. I would listen to people that I wanted to be like. I saw the happiness in their eyes. I wanted that happiness. I listened to them talk about the books they read, the things they did for service work to help other people less fortunate. I liked some way people dressed, so I would find out where they bought their suits and how they. And so I begged, borrowed, and stole everything I have today.
I love the way you put that, Alan. So eloquently.
Well, I'm just telling the truth, Mel. I'm just telling the truth.
Well, I thank you for being transparent and sharing where you came from. Alan, how can individuals reach you or get a copy of your book?
Well, I would love for them to go on my website, which is www.ampublicspeaking.com. ampublicspeaking.com. And they can send me an email through the website. And if they tell me they were listening to this radio show, I would give them the Val Parker Al McDougall discount. How's that sound? They can also go on Amazon. They can also go on Amazon. My book is on Amazon. My book is on Kindle. And it's been accepted last month at the Barnes & Noble. However, I haven't got the books. They're only buying 500. I shouldn't say only. It's a great dream of mine. They're buying 500 and putting them in different locations to see how the book sales proceed. So the best way, my website, go on. They can contact me at my regular email, which is my name, McDougall Allen, M.C., DOUGALLALAN @hotmail.com, or they can call me at 412.
Oh, don't give us the phone number, Alan.
Okay. Okay, that's fine. But
yeah,
that's how they can reach me.
Yeah, because that way you have the ability, because, you know, with the line of work you do, you don't want your phone constantly going off and stuff. It'd be a distraction. You can call them back, you know.
Okay.
Sorry, radio audience, but we have to protect our gift. And sometimes it's not a good time to speak. So if you will email Alan at the email information he gave you and also his website, you'll get a chance to peruse through there and read through there to learn more about him. And please follow him. He's on Facebook, too, as well. And that's the best thing to do if you want to know an individual or get to know, you know, study their work, read their work, purchase his book. Because, as I said, that's how you know the heart and the passion of individuals and be able to move to the next level yourself. Because, you know, success leaves clues. Like I said, we're all fighting because we're X something, and that's why I created that Fight for Your Dreams tour, is because of the fact that I know people are going through tough times, and I know people feel that they failed and that the bottom fell out from under them. But it's okay. It's only things. Alan, do you realize that we have more people committing suicide in this dispensation that we're in right now from last year and even into this year because they've lost their things?
Yes. And it's funny you should mention that, Val, because I was speaking over in the UK about 2 years ago, and I did a radio show for BBC, which is aired every Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve for the last 2 years, and I spoke about just that topic, about suicides and domestic violence and violence in the workplace, but suicides in particular because of the Christmas Eve and the New Year's Eve peak in that situation.
Yeah, it's a tough time during those times because individuals are lonely. And, you know, you can see people where they have a whole bunch of money and still not be at peace, and mainly because they don't have the Prince of Peace in their lives, which is the main thing because, you know, you can't occupy your mind and thoughts if you don't know who the Creator is. If we don't embrace a larger vision of ourselves and realize that we didn't just show up on the planet just out of happenstance, that we have a Creator and He knows all about us because, you know, He's interested in every part, every dispensation of our life, but we have to invite Him in. And once we invite Him in, we recognize and we're able to see things a lot clearer and realize that a lot of these things that we think make us who we are really don't.
Absolutely. There's an old saying I heard somewhere. I also begged, borrowed, and stole a lot of quotations. I think that they're given to us during our lifetime to incorporate into our lives, and then hopefully we pass them on to someone else that can use them. But the one that I want to talk right now is there's two kinds of plans, and I'm sure a lot of people have heard this already. There are two kinds of plans, my plans and God's plans. And what makes God laugh are my plans.
Wow. Now that's nice. I like that one.
So, and then I used to have people come into my, I spent 7 years up in Canada working in an office for what they called an EAP or an employee assistance program, helping people going through the same things that I had gone through back 25 years ago. I'll be sober if I continue what I'm doing today, Val. For the next 2.5 months, I'll have 25 years of sobriety this June. I'm so dry now that I'm a fire hazard.
Wow.
But when I was working in that office, people would come in to say, and you can't con a con. And that was the benefit of having me work in there, is because I knew all the answers that they were going to come in with because I lived that years before. But anyway, they go to a meeting and they say, I really have a hard time with this higher power.
Mm.
And I don't believe in a higher power. And I say, listen, that's fine. But I said, this is my story. I didn't believe in a higher power at one time either because I didn't want to go to the meetings until I met my sponsor, Jim. And Jim said to me, Alan, if you don't believe in a power greater than me, go down to the post office on the main street of any city, take off all your clothes and stand there, and a power greater than you will come along and take you away. and that's as simple as it is. There's always a power greater than you.
Now, that's funny. When you were talking, Alan, I was remembering when my kids were growing up, and you know, they would get in trouble at school, or they'll be fighting back and forth with each other, and they'll be like, it wasn't me. I know it. I mean, they would just be lying, and I would always know when they were lying or telling the truth. And then they would be crying, and you always taking her side, and this and that, and I'd be like, I look at them straight in the face and I say, you did such and such and such. I know you did it. And then a couple of hours later, my son, my oldest son, he would always say to me, "Mom, how did you know?" And I said, "Because I was the greatest liar that was going in my house to level."
Well, I have.
I was
I
the
have
best
a funny...
liar in the house, so I know I am not the one.
Well, I have a. That reminds me of a funny story, Val. I grew up on a farm, very poor, up in Ontario. And when I was a little boy, we had a party line, where there were maybe 15 people on the same telephone line, and everybody had these phones on the wall that you had to crank. And if you picked up the receiver, there was the possibility of other people listening in your conversation.
Uh-huh, Alan, you're telling our age now.
Well, you didn't need to say that you remembered, you know. So anyway, my mother used to, I knew she was very interested in the community because she always listened on everybody else's conversations. But I tell you that to say that I skipped school one day, and the teacher was living down the street, or down the highway, and my mother picked up the phone and overheard a conversation about Alan McDougall not being at school that day. So that's another way that I got caught with my badness in school, was my mother listening on the party line.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
yeah.
They're all funny stories.
You know, it's great when you can look back at those things and laugh, but unfortunately a lot of people don't look back and laugh because they're still carrying that baggage with them. What would you say to individuals like that, Alan?
Well, I have a couple things. One is this, Val, and I say everything from the bottom of my heart is making a decision will make you one of two things. I try to live a very simple life, but making a decision will make you one of two things, Val, either bitter or better. And you can make that conscious decision to be one of either. It costs the same. Actually, it costs more to be bitter. And there's no one has more reason for me than to be bitter at my childhood, but I decided, why would I want to carry that with me the rest of my life? And I go back to a story I heard one time, and up in the universe, up in heaven, there's a lake, and it's called the Lake of Forgiveness and Forget. When you bring these burdens, with you, you throw them into the lake, and it causes a ripple. And then the ripple dissipates, and it's gone. And then you walk away. But the secret is, don't go back. Because if you look back, there's a sign every 50 feet around that lake in heaven called, and it says, no fishing. But a lot of us go back and fish out our problems. So when you let them go and deal with them, and there are two ways that I dealt with problems. Very simply, talking about it with trusted friends and writing about it. Men cannot have diaries. Men can have journals. The difference is about $2. It costs $2 more for a diary than a journal because they're a little prettier.
Okay.
But it's the same healing mechanism. You start to write. I'd like to, if I may, I'd like to tell you a story about the letters to my father. When I was about 40, I was carrying some issues with my father and I that I never told him I loved him as a little boy. So I went to a counselor and I expressed that concern, and she said, "Why don't you write your father letters?" But she said, "When you write them, you print them as you did as a little boy, and you print with your opposite hand that you write in. Because you're dealing then, you're absolutely touching the emotions. You're not thinking in your head because you're slowing everything down." So, to continue my story, I wrote letters, and then I mail them to my father, who lived 6 hours away. And then he would write me back in his 70-year-old shaky handwriting. And this went on for maybe a year, year and a half. When we saw each other with my children for vacation, we never talked about the letters. That was a post office ritual. One day I went home from work to my apartment and I got a voicemail from a nurse I used to date in high school. And she said, "Alan, if you want to see your dad alive, you better come home tonight." So I drove home in a wintry old night, storming all the way, about an 8-hour drive, and I walk into the hospital that night, and there's my father. And he's had some strokes. And he opens up his eyes as I walk in the room, and the room is dark. There's a little nightlight on in the corner. And he said, with great difficulty, three things. "Alan, I love you, and I knew you would come."
Wow.
And but you know, and 90 minutes later, he died.
Wow.
But Val, there was nothing. There was nothing left to say. We had said everything. So as I looked around the room, with the nightlight on and him laying there, and I hadn't called the nurses in yet, there were my letters tied up in a blue ribbon on the bed,
wow,
on the little table in the bedroom. And I call these letters the Blue Ribbon Letters. And what I've done is I have them in my office here in Pittsburgh, and I cut a piece of blue ribbon off the ribbon, and I tied it to my suitcase. So if I'm lucky enough when I'm traveling now to be at the same airport as my luggage is, I can walk over to the carousel and I can reconnect with my dad just for that split second. I've had more luck reconnecting with him than I have with that nurse that called me with the voicemail.
Wow.
But see, those are things that I've done that I think are very important to share to other people.
And it was a powerful message of reconnection indeed. I'm like, as you were talking, I was remembering my own things and my own mess, as I would say, or things that is in my closet, in my emotional vault. And writing my books, you know, as you know, I've written four. But each one of those books were my declaration of independence, of victory, of moving to another level. The Bible talks about moving from glory to glory, that God blesses you from glory to glory. So that is, you know, as I became more liberated in who I was able to better speak fluently in order to transition so that I not only bring healing and restoration for myself, but also to impart it into other individuals as well. And that's
absolutely
what this journey is about. That's what this journey is about. It's about impacting and making a difference in other individuals' lives, and that's why we do what we do, without question.
Absolutely, and I've been told, people have asked me this question, Val, and it's probably happened to you and a lot of other speakers that are on the phone tonight, is, are you a motivational speaker or are you an inspirational speaker? And I like to consider myself, hopefully, an inspirational speaker. And an inspirational speaker to me is a definition of where you distract someone thinking and you force them to create an opportunity for change. And then the motivational part is to continue to do that.
Yeah, I list myself as an inspirational speaker because, you know, I inspire individuals to live their life up to the full potential. And you know, that's what I'm aspiring to do for individuals. And It's not always an easy thing to do, as I said, but we get it done, don't we, Alan?
Absolutely, and you know the key for my success, if that's what you call it, Val, is my humor. I have the great ability to laugh at myself.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
I
laugh at myself all the time.
I come out of a childhood where I had a speech impediment that, for the country and western fans on this call, they may remember Mel Tillis, who had a speech impediment but could sing beautifully. I can't sing beautifully. So I had to overcome that fear and that speech impediment to get up on the stage and be able to transfer my hopes and my dreams and my well wishes into someone else's spirit.
Yeah, I have a brother that stutters, but when he he's a preacher. But when he's talking business, he does not stutter. And when he preaches, he does not stutter. But when he's like around, you know, just like us, he has the tendency to stutter at times. I've never been able to figure that out.
No, but I used to get up in front of the school way back in the 60s and have to do those speeches every year, and I would cry. And I was in a one-room school, grade 1 to grade 8, with the same teacher, and that teacher made us do these oral compositions, they were called, and I get up to the front of the class of 52 kids, and I get up there and I cry, and then he say, go sit down. And that happened every year from grade 1 to grade 7. Now, there was an upside to that, too. There was a positive side, Val, because I never had to learn another speech all those years. It was the same speech. Nobody ever heard it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think I missed that one, Alan. Say that again.
I was getting up every year to prepare to say the same speech to the class, but because I stuttered so bad and I cried, the teacher said, go sit down, so I never gave the speech.
Oh, okay.
So I never had to learn a new speech for 7 years. It was the same one every year, but no one ever heard it.
Okay, now I've got it.
So there's always a funny side to every story.
Indeed. Shirley, you have any questions for Alan? You've been mighty quiet. I do.
Yes, I've been listening. Alan, you know, I was so elated when you spoke over the weekend, and now to hear more of your story, and you're in more of a relaxed mode, and you're revealing so much more. First of all, I commend you on being dry for so many years, but don't start any fires around me now. And the other thing is that, you know, to hear your story and to talk about, you know, I listened about your book, Breakthrough, and hearing your story, you are so much your title, your book, your breakthrough. You know who you are. You said before, when you were drinking, you didn't know who Alan was. He was someone you wasn't even familiar with. And to hear that you have a relationship with God, that you do believe in a higher power, and that in doing so, you have come into full circle of who you are, who you belong to, and what your purpose is in life. And I love it that you feel that you're an inspirational speaker, because you do distract people from their thoughts. I saw that Saturday night. And to put them on a path of thinking beyond their current situation, you inspire people. I commend you for finding your purpose in life. And I have a question, though.
Yes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I have a question. For those that are listening, and can you share with us the transition from finding who you are to where you are now, as far as that point of, you talked about being in that bar for 5 hours trying to drink. Do you feel that during that transition time, that when you finally decided to go sober, that during that time that did you have a relationship with God during that time, or did you find it after you became sober?
That's a very, very good question, and it makes me think back, because at the time when alcohol was my best love affair, it was everything to me. So it was my higher power, it was the best, it was better than anything I could ever think of, until the day it let me down. And Mm-hmm. When I went to meetings and I went to a 28-day program, and maybe I can answer this question with this story. I was in rehab. I was sober maybe 6 weeks. I'd never been sober that long in my life. I went to rehab for a 28-day program. They kept me 35, not because they liked me, because I needed the extra week. But the second week that I was there, I woke up at 2 in the morning, and I heard my roommate say before he went to sleep that he had found God and had faith. And I didn't have that at that time. So I went downstairs. I was smoking at the time, had cigarettes. I went down to talk to this old sober guy that was a volunteer at the rehab. And his name was Sergeant Bob. And I said, "Bob, I'm not going to make this sobriety." He said, "Sit down and tell me why." I said, "I don't have any faith, and I don't believe in a God." Well, he said, "Let's talk about that." So he said, "Stand up." So I stood up. He said, "Sit down." I sat down. He said, "Stand up." I stood up. He said, "Sit down." I sat down. He said, "Stand up." And I stood and I sat for 7 consecutive times. And I said to myself, "This guy's crazy. However, I'm doing the action. I must be crazier." And finally, Bob said to me, "Sit down, Al." And he looked at me with deep eyes and he said, "You know what, Al? You have all the faith that you need, because never once did you look back and see if that chair was there. All you need is the faith of a mustard seed. Now go to bed." And I slept the sleep of a baby. I was 38 years old and had never slept that well in my life. So if there was a moment in time where that seed was planted, that was the night.
Wow, that's powerful.
Powerful. Powerful.
Well, I've been told that simplicity is profound.
Yeah,
that is excellent.
And that's all I could handle that time, was that simple story. If he'd got into a whole bunch of dialogue, he would have lost me. But by doing that small action, my mind, and more importantly, my heart, could believe it.
Hmm. I'm going to, we're almost out of time, and if anybody wants to ask Alan a question, you can press 1, and Alan will be more than happy to answer any questions or comments you may have. Press 1, and you will be able to speak with Alan directly. Shirley, you have any other questions for Alan?
Just to say that, you know, thank you for sharing that. And the fact is that also you talked about your speech impediment and overcoming that. How did you overcome that?
I'm sorry, I just lost you on the last part. On how I overcame what, I'm sorry?
Your speech impediment.
Oh, my speech impediment. I learned to slow down my thinking to match my voice, because my brain was always racing, and I tried to speak as fast as my brain was going, and I just couldn't keep up. So that was one of the ways, was through meditation and reading about it and practicing and talking to the family dog and talking to, we were on a dairy farm. I talked a lot to cows and pigs and horses. I was always in front of an audience. However,
was that before or after the alcohol, Alan?
That was before. That was before.
Okay.
That was when I was a kid, about 11 years old, because I was so sick and tired of people laughing at me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the extreme or the extent that I would go to try to get myself out of the mess I was in. Then when I started drinking at the age of 13, my stuttering went away because I was much more relaxed.
Oh.
And then I continued to work on that since I have quit drinking. So it's been a lifelong process, but it started out by, and I think the recipe for me was, the more self-confidence I earned, the less problems I have with speaking.
know, Alan, you said that you started drinking at 13, and I can remember I was drinking during that time, too. And
wow.
It's hard for people, for parents, not say people, it's hard for parents to believe that their little darlings could wind up being alcoholics because they've been sneaking, drinking. I used to, now how I got into alcohol was one of my classmates' father owned a liquor store. So she used to bring a pint of liquor from, it was me and two other people, so we would all have our own fifth bottle of a pint of alcohol, and we would drink that in the morning before we went to class. And New York, there was this hamburger place called Wetson's, and they used to sell hamburgers and fries and drinks in the morning. They didn't have the breakfast sandwiches then. They still had hamburgers that they were selling then. And we would stop there, get us a hamburger, because at the time they were like, what, 10 cents? We would get us a hamburger, order a drink, pour the drink out, and put our alcohol in there.
Yep. That's living the dream.
And at that time, it wasn't as hard as it is now because we were able to drink in the classroom. So we were sitting there in the classroom with our drink in our hand with a straw, sipping away, getting high right there in class.
Man.
And, yeah, this is in New York.
This is great. This is great. I missed out on a lot. I'm sorry to say that. Anyway, but there's something I just wanted to add, if I may, for 30 seconds, is there's something I learned is when you start drinking at the age that you and I did, Val, and when we start drinking for effect, you see, I never drank for pleasure. I drank for effect, and there's a difference. And my emotions stopped growing at the age of 13 and 14 because I was numbing them. So when I didn't know this, but I was a 37-year-old man with the emotions of a 13-year-old boy. So when I went to rehab, they told me that. And that's when I work with people now with addiction, I ask them how old they are when they started, and they may say 14. So I remember that I'm possibly dealing with a little boy or a little woman or a little girl that's a woman or a man now with the emotional with the emotional stage of a 14-year-old. So when I left rehab, the day I graduated, it was on my actual physical birthday. So the director said, "How do you feel today, Alan? You finished something." I said, "One, I'm so glad I finished something in my life because I started so many things and never finished them. Second, I'm so happy it's my birthday and I'm graduating." And she said, "How old do you think you are today?" And I was 38. And I wanted to impress her, so I remembered the story of the emotions, and I said, "I'm 13 today." And she said, "Alan, you think very highly of yourself."
Wow.
So I remembered that. So I started out finding out who Alan was at the age of 38 physically and possibly 11 or 12 emotionally.
Wow. Those of you that are joined in late, I have been speaking with Mr. Alan McDougall, and you can reach him and find out more about him by visiting his website, ampublicspeaking.com, ampublicspeaking.com. And Alan, if you would like to give your email address, you may give it at this time.
Absolutely, Val. My email, the best email for me is McDougall Alan, McDougallAllan at hotmail.com. So it's my name backwards, McDougall Alan at hotmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. And I've so enjoyed being on the show tonight, Val, and before my time runs out, I just want to thank everyone for the opportunity for inviting me.
Thank you so much, Alan. It has been a delight, and I look forward to seeing you in Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area, April 13th. We will be at the Sheraton, Washington North with the Fight for Your Dreams tour. That will be in the Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area. And you can find out more information by visiting my website, my corporate website, which is www.arisebyvnp.com. And if you like further information, you may email me at soultopics@gmail.com. That's soultopics@gmail.com. And I invite you to visit my website from thesoulofawoman.com. If you know anybody that's going through depression or maybe contemplating suicide or a victim or past victim of domestic violence, please visit my website. You will find resources on there with emergency contact numbers and also my books, my four books, From the Soul of a Woman, Unveiling Secrets from the Heart, Restored Vessels, and Unlimited Possibilities. They're available to you. And as I said, it's almost like a chronological display there of every emotional level that I went through. And, of course, Unlimited Possibility is the climax, because after I've done all that I could do, I know that I serve a limitless God. And he wants to do so much more for me and for you, but we have to participate in our rescue and know that he is who he says he is, and he's able to do exceedingly and abundantly above all we can ask or think. I thank you so much for joining and being my special guest tonight, Alan. And those of you, he has a book, Breaking Through. So if you want to know more about the heart, the man of Alan McDougal, visit his website, ampublicspeaking.com, and order the book. Shirley?
Thank you for joining us tonight, and that can also be reached on Facebook, Shirley Kurtz. Thank you, Alan.
You're more welcome. I truly, truly did enjoy this past hour. I had a lot of fun.
I had a lot of fun, too. I had no idea you were so comical. You were very amusing, Alan.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
I wouldn't say that you're ready to be a full-fledged comedian, but you are very amusing.
Well, that's great. That's great. I think that laughter is a great someone once said laughter is jogging inside.
Oh, yes, indeed. And I tell you, it does the heart good. If you can just laugh, it will break all kind of stress vessels that are going through in your life and help you move to the next level. I can attest to that. I had my children to be laughing.
I'm going to have fun tonight thinking about drinking in New York when you were 13.
Oh, yes, Alan, I'm telling you, you have to read my book. Those of you that don't have From the Soul of a Woman and Unveiling Secrets, you have to read the book. As I got braver, I told more. But you can always follow me on Facebook. Valerie Parker is on Facebook, and also From the Soul of a Woman is on Facebook. So you can be my friend. And I thank you all for joining with another Hot Topics from the Soul. And I'll see you next week. And please, those of you that missed any portion of the show, you can replay it by going to blogtalkradio.com/soultopics. If you're listening by phone, you can go and replay it directly on the website at any time on demand. So get it, download it, and forward it to a friend. Thank you. Have a powerful week, and I'll see you again on another Hot Topics from the Soul. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.